What if I told you that being well compensated and fairly compensated are not the same thing? Keep listening as we dive into the 2026 compensation data. Welcome to the Money Meets Medicine podcast, where we talk all about the personal finance topics you wish you had learned in medical school. I'm your host, Justin Harvey, and here is your co-host, who just got back from his first trip to Camden Yards, Dr. Jimmy Turner.
Yeah, I took a trip to baseball world up in Maryland, and Wesley got invited to a baseball tournament, which was exciting because he's had quite the journey in baseball. He started at 10. Most kids nowadays start at 5 or 6 and then start playing travel ball at 8, which is insane. So we got to baseball late, had so much catching up to do. And Wesley, super proud of him, has finally not only caught up, but he is a very good catcher and hitter. And so he went 600 on the 5-day tournament and had hit a home run, had a few doubles, and is doing quite well for himself. So super proud. But anytime we take a trip that's not North Carolina, we see if we can knock off a baseball stadium because Wesley's such a kid, big kid into baseball. We're trying to get to all 30 before he graduates, goes to college, not graduates. That last summer, we'll probably take some trips too. So Camden Yards was number 10 of 30. So we're a third of the way there officially. Super excited about that. So in terms of, all the listeners should know, you should know that we just recorded a 30-minute episode and Jimmy's podcast equipment failed, and that has completely thrown me for a loop. But we're diehards. We're hitting record again. We're going to make this work. I apparently need new equipment, which is what it is. So we're going to talk about data. Speaking of doubles and triples and home runs and stuff, we're going to talk about data on this episode because Medscape recently published the 2026 compensation data, which is technically based on 2025. And I always think this thing is interesting because it gets physicians' perspective on the data. It's not just the data. And so I'm going to dive into four of the things that I thought were most interesting on this report and worth discussing on the show and getting your reactions, Justin, as a financial planner on these numbers. Before we do that, don't forget disability insurance, number one financial task for physicians. So if you don't have disability insurance, you're in training or a practicing physician, moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability. We'd be more than happy to help you get a quote, show you what your options are at Money Meets Medicine Disability. So head to moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability and click get a quote and we'll get you started on that journey. All right, so some context first. Context is always important. I know you're a fan of context. There's lots of places to get compensation data. If you have a lawyer, you know, you can get MGMA data or a planner that has access to it. You might look at Sullivan Cotter or AAMC. This is the Medscape data, which comes from about 6,000 physicians in over 29 specialties saying what their compensation is and breaking it down into overall compensation, if they get paid by RVUs or bonuses and that sort of structure in terms of incentives. About 60% of the respondents were men, 40% were women. And I thought this had some really interesting data in it this year that I hadn't quite seen before. And we're going to start off with a banger. So we're going to go through four of them. On this report, we'll get to the banger in a second, but average physician compensation rose about 3% in 2025. And primary care averaged about $300,000, $298. Specialist averaged around $417. And 9 specialties were flat or down compared to the prior year. So the ones that were flat were like peds and rheum. The ones that were actually down, like they made less money in 2025 than they made in 2020. And listeners, listen for your specialty as we talk about it. PM&R, nephrology, dermatology, interestingly, hemonc, palm, allergy and immunology, and psych. They were all down between 1% to 3%. There were 11 specialties that outpaced inflation. In other words, their growth was more than the 2.7% inflation rate. So if the overall compensation went up by 3%, it just barely covered inflation. But there were 11 specialties that outpaced it. The biggest one, you want to guess what it is? If you haven't cheated already and looking at the notes, it went up by 10%, if that's a clue.
Surgery?
Cardiology.
That was going to be my next guess.
Yeah. So cardiology, right? So that was the biggest one. And then there were 10 others that were 4% or higher, including anesthesiology, my specialty. The lowest paying specialty, which I'm not going to name by name because it's just mean and I get death threats every time I mention it, was $266,000 per year on average. You could maybe guess what it is, but I'm not going to say it. The banger is that 30%, 28% technically, of the physicians on this survey felt like the money that they made as a physician was less than what their family needed. And I find that interesting to observe, as you would say, Justin, to use your own language, that the median household income in the United States is $80,000. Because there are many wealthy households in the United States, the average is higher. It's $121,000. And the lowest medical specialty I just described makes more than two times, one of those numbers, and four times higher. So two times the average, four times the median compared to other United States American households when it comes to income. And almost a third of physicians said they felt like they didn't make enough money for what their family needed. I'm just going to drop that there and see what your response is to that, Justin, because I found that interesting.
Context, Jimmy. It is complicated. And I alluded to this in our last conversation, which I think perhaps got, it was in the corrupted file.
Correct.
This is something I've mentioned in the past, like the economic trade being asked of doctors today is different than 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I mentioned like doing these talks for a department, and I've got like the senior attending and perhaps one of the juniors who are, and the senior guys, oh, I did this or that and it worked for me, and just buy a bunch of houses and get your stockbroker and invest in the US, it never fails. Glad that worked 30 years ago and that might work today, but you can't buy rental properties anymore and make money on them. And yeah, investing in the US is great, but there's a lot of asset classes and you don't actually need a stockbroker anymore. So that was not super helpful. I read this and I think, oh yeah, they gave a decade of their lives. They went into a lot of debt, and that there's a commensurate expectation of lifestyle on the other side of that. And people who think they're not making enough for their family, they see a lifestyle that they feel like they're having to settle for a lifestyle that is inferior to what they thought they were trading for. So whether or not that's right or wrong, that does not surprise me.
I'm going to be a little bit of a harsher critic on this just because there's a separate question, which is one of the other four interesting facts we're going to talk about on the show, where it asks physicians, do you feel like you are fairly compensated as an individual? And do you feel like physicians as a whole are compensated fairly? So the big landscape versus your individual decision, which answered a different question for me that's more bent on what you're talking about, where, yeah, there's a lot of changes in medicine and burnout's a thing and staffing issues are more prevalent and autonomy has been completely attacked. And so I think that impacts that kind of number. What I will say is that at even a $270,000 income, there are places in this country that are so high cost of living and inflation has just run rampant that I can totally understand that if you took it in the context of, does my family make enough to maintain the lifestyle that we just had in 2022, 23, 24, and my specialty pay has gone down or stayed stagnant, but inflation's gone up by 2, 3, 4, 5%, 8% at sometimes during some months, I can totally wrap my head around not having enough for your family's needs, because it's your family's needs have stayed the same in terms of your lifestyle and your purchases and your decisions, but your compensation has stayed stagnant and or gone down depending on which specialty you're in. And so from that standpoint, particularly in a high cost of living area, like I can wrap my head around that. But if you told me like you're a brand new grad who just went from making $75,000 in residency to $270,000 as an attending, and that you don't have enough money for your lifestyle, like you do get to decide a priori what you're spending money on when you finish training. There's some things that you're required to pay. So student loans, for example, that's a not insignificant number when it comes to your personal finances and your budget. But that kind of person, I have a harder time wrapping my head around a third of people saying they don't make enough money to support their family's needs. And so it makes me want to ask the people that filled out the survey, not just, do you feel like you make enough for your family's needs, but why? Because there are lots of circumstances where it makes a ton of sense. And I'm like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. That I totally get that. And there are other situations where I'm like, I think you need to learn how to budget. You need to learn how to set your financial goals first before you spend your money. And if I'm, as a financial literacy person for the last 10 years, I know that exists in the physician community because it's a huge problem. And I don't know, my mind goes both ways, to compassion and also to maybe we need to be a little more disciplined financially.
Yeah, I look at this and I think 6,000 sounds like a lot of doctors, but actually not. And we spread across 20 plus specialties. And I'm wondering like, oh, how many psychiatrists versus spine surgeons versus cardiologists versus peds nephrologists?
They actually break that down, but I didn't write it down, so I don't know the answer.
Yeah, I'd be curious. Maybe we can do this for the next time. I would like to look at the source data and just see, because how many spine surgeons or orthopedists or whatever, think about a high paying procedural specialty. How many of them, Jimmy, do you know who are going to sit down and take the time to answer 40 detailed questions about, first of all, how many of them even understand their compensation? I looked at a lot of those contracts, and sometimes it's straightforward, sometimes it's not. Call pay, this or that, differentials based on 6,000 versus 9,000 versus 12,000 RVUs, different pay per RVU and different levels of production. What about the surgery center? Do we count the distributions from the surgery center? Like all that stuff. I have doubts about how well physicians understand their own compensation.
Well,
but
I think that's a good point.
I just think there's probably a lot of noise, and I think Medscape is probably selling marketing, and I don't know.
So I think this is a good point, because actually this was going to be point number three, but let's make it point number two. The survey actually looked into physicians and if they negotiate their compensation and productivity and how that's tied to their compensation. And in that report, and this is again self-reported, so I find that interesting, 11% said that they negotiated their compensation aggressively. 26% said that, like, maybe moderately. 27% said negotiation wasn't an option at all. And obviously there's the couple of slices that are like, I can negotiate it a little bit. But the overwhelming majority of physicians did not negotiate aggressively or even moderately. Something like 65% of them, 70% of them either didn't do it at all or was lightly negotiated, or they said it wasn't an option. And this is a fascinating thing, because they actually have a quote in this article that made my skin crawl. And I know this is going to be a contentious topic on the podcast, which always makes for good listening. But they have a quote from a physician compensation consultant. Like, these are the idiots that hospitals bring in to basically say, hey, what are your thoughts on our physician compensation model? Remember, these people are paid for by the hospital, so they're incentivized to save the hospital money. And in my experience, their numbers are very interesting in that context. If you're being paid by to consult for somebody, your job is to come up with the most reasonable number that is low to save them money, because that's who's paying you. It's not like the physicians are paying for that consultant to come in, which in case it would be a much higher number. And so again, context matters. But this person says in this Medscape article, and the link will be in the show notes, by the way, if you want to go look at the stuff yourself, if you have a Medscape account, where the person says, we actually tell hospitals that you need to determine what your physician compensation plan is and basically make it standard for everybody, so that you can then tell physicians when they want to negotiate their pay that we don't negotiate. Like, it's just a full stop. We don't negotiate. And I find this an interesting statement, because you can look at it two ways, right? And I'm a capitalist, so you're going to probably be able to guess which way I go on this. But one of them is, yeah, that's great. Fair pay for everybody. Everybody gets paid the same based on the same metrics for all the same things. So we don't negotiate, and that's end of discussion. It makes it very, quote unquote, fair for everybody. The problem is, we live in a capitalist society, and the reason why America...
it's highly cronyistic, or if not oligopolistic, in this corner of the world.
And I don't necessarily disagree with that. But what I will say is that as a business owner, the way that businesses get compensated is by showing the value that you provide in the world. And that's what I love about business. That's what I love about capitalism from a purist standpoint, is that you are worth the value that you provide, and that value is determined by the people that you help. And so you should get paid more if you provide more value. And so when you are working at a hospital, and this used to drive me insane, and you provide more value in a demonstrable, verifiable, objectively measurable way, whether that be clinical productivity, whether that be from, if you're in academics, research publications, teaching awards, you name it, there are ways to actually value people and the value that they provide. And you want to pay that high person with the person who brings their lunch pail in. I call them a lunch pail doctor. They bring their lunch pail in, they do their work, and they bring their lunch pail out. And all they do is that clinical care for patients. And you tell those two people that we don't negotiate, we're going to compensate you the same. What you've created, my friend, is communism. And what happens in those situations is that high flyer is either going to go start their own business, they're going to leave your institution, they're going to quit medicine because they don't feel like they're being fairly compensated for the work that they provide compared to their peers who are making the same amount of money. You basically have created a system where people are going to work to the lowest minimum requirement at your institution. So if that's what you want to create, because incentives matter, then perfect. That system's great. There is the side, people are like, yeah, but what about people that are historically underpaid or that compensation is not always fair for them? And I agree. I think that's an issue. I don't think that the way to solve it is to make compensation the same for everybody. And that really rubbed me the wrong way when I read that quote from a compensation consultant that works with big hospitals, and they bring them in to figure out what fair compensation looks like for physicians. And their answer was, we set it up based on the metrics that we have, and then we tell people we don't negotiate. I was like, that's just a great way to have high-flying, high-achieving physicians not work for you.
Longtime listeners of Money Meets Medicine know that I don't recommend other businesses or services lightly. And that's because this entire platform was built out of my desire to prevent others from being harmed like I was by bad advice and bad actors in the financial space. This is one reason I say no to over 95% of pitches that I get for advertising and sponsorships on Money Meets Medicine. But some partnerships are no-brainers, like recommending the same company that I use in my own personal life. For example, working with Gelt for my tax strategy is set to save my family more than $40,000 per year in taxes compared to my old CPA, who only touched base in February or March each year. Gelt, on the other hand, is a proactive, tech-forward tax strategy company, and I could say, from experience, that their customer service is incredible. So if you're a locum stock or a practice owner, partner getting a K-1, surgery center owner, or maybe you're a W-2 physician with a 5 or 6 figure side income, you need more than a CPA who just checks in February or March. You need a modern CPA firm built for business owners and high-earning professionals with a strong specialization in physicians. Summer is the easiest time to switch, and Gelt is built for that transition. Dedicated tax strategists, real human expertise, technology doing the grunt work in the background. To make it even more of a no-brainer than it already is for the docs that fit that bill, Money Meets Medicine has partnered with Gelt to offer a 10% discount on your first year services when working with them. Head over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/CPA to schedule a call and get that 10% discount when you do so. Now back to the show.
This is like a confluence of problems here.
Yeah.
I look at this and I think
it's murky. It's complicated, to be clear. That's what my brain
is. The sort of gobbling up of independent practices and the prevailing trends of reimbursement, Medicare, and then commercial payers that make it difficult for free markets to operate. And to the extent that they can in something as non-discretionary as medical care. More and more doctors are getting pushed into precisely the kind of setting you're describing. You might live in a town and there's literally no option. You can't even run an independent practice based on the reimbursement you could get. And so you're forced to go to XYZ University Hospital or XYZ big conglomerate healthcare, and then you're going to be dealing with this. So this is exactly why a 12% savings rate is probably not a good idea, because you're going to have a long road in a place that is not a good place to be. And there's ways to create, on a one-off basis, there are a lot of creative ways to try to solve this problem. But in aggregate, it is a troubling trend.
And this goes to one of the other interesting facts from this, which is that 40% of doctors in the survey had a side gig. They made money, non-clinical money, outside of medicine. And I can tell you that when I felt undervalued, unappreciated, one of the things that I did as a high flyer, as a high achiever who has done a lot of things in this world, is I plugged myself into the things that were going to provide that value and feel accomplished and feel like I was putting work in and it was being noticed and recognized. And that sometimes isn't monetary compensation, by the way. Like, to be clear, like, there are lots of ways to get value. And that's when I went part-time at the hospital as an employed academic physician. And I started pouring into my business, which has been amazing for me. And I get to determine as an entrepreneur what my value is and what the values of my services are. And it's an interesting thing. If you are a person who wants to sponsor Money Meets Medicine, partner with me, you like my brand, you like that I'm an outspoken person and I have this ability to connect with other people, and you send me an email and you're like, hey, we love your stuff, love your brand, love your Instagram account, it's really growing a ton, we're interested in working with you. The pricing is dictated based on what people say the value they're getting out of the work that I'm going to provide for them. And as an entrepreneur, I can offer something to somebody, and then if they say yes, I go higher the next time and higher the next time and higher the next time until someone finally says, you know what, I'm not willing to pay that number. And the mind-blowing thing to me in 10 years is that the amount of money that I said, hey, I'll do this for X amount of dollars back when I started, because I had no concept of the amount of value that was provided, versus now in a free market economy where I dictate my prices and all that stuff, I have found what the value is to the tune of numbers based on working in that kind of environment. And it was very hard to go back and work 5 days a week at a hospital where I just got paid for the amount of money for my shift, regardless of the value that I provided and regardless of the name that I helped build for institutions that I worked for. And yeah, after experiencing the other paradigm where I was a business owner and I got to determine the value and I got to determine, it was hard. I'll be honest with you. I could never go back to that model and work at it 100% of the time. And that's why 40% of doctors who filled out the survey also have a side gig where they get to determine their value. And it might be like low-lying fruit as an example for this is doing medical expert witness work. The first time you do that, you email a buddy, a friend. You're like, hey, I heard that you were doing medical malpractice work. Do you mind sending me your fee schedule? Because you have no idea what to charge. And it will blow your mind what people charge to do medical expert witness work, many hundreds of dollars more than what you do and bill for as a physician, because lawyers say it's worth that much. And you know, because that's what the market shows. And so it's not surprising to me because of burnout, because of the loss of autonomy, because physicians don't feel like they have any ability to negotiate in an employed position. They're now opening up their own businesses, whether it's medically related or not, and have experienced that. And then it's really hard to go back.
And another thing, Jimmy, if we just look at the list of specialties here and you start at the top and go all the way down to the bottom, and I'm not going to do it, you can kind of picture in your head how that list looks. Yep. The ones at the top are the ones that, because of the way healthcare economics functions in our country, they can still, in some places, in some clinical settings, some states, they can still run a business and not just be a sort of a clinical cog, but more of a, they do the clinical work, but they also have the business participation of profits, enterprise value, and the economic wherewithal that comes with that. And as you get further down the list, you get more and more. This is just, you can't do that outside of a hospital. You can't do that outside of a hospital. But you threw out hem-onc, these very specialized internal medicine. Uh-huh. They just are only ever going to be in a more established setting. And those are the specialties where typically you just have less bargaining power and you're just plugged into whatever that consultant from McKinsey is going to hand to the CEO of the hospital.
Yeah, I definitely agree. There are specialties where negotiation is harder, more complicated. I do know that I had a prior client who was a hem-onc physician who went to his hospital after he showed that he'd determined some billing practices that he could be using that led to substantially higher collections for the hospital, and went to the hospital and said, hey, I'm billing way more than my peers. How can we make this right? And was able to negotiate a significantly higher compensation package for himself. And so it's not to say that these situations are impossible.
Oh, and that's what I said. On a one-off basis, there's always a way.
Yeah, which brings us to the fourth thing that's fascinating from this report to me, is that there were two different questions. One was basically, do you feel personally fairly compensated as an individual? And the answer was 53% of people said yes. And that was up actually from 48 from last year. But then they asked a different question, which was, do you feel like the profession overall is well paid? And 61% of people said they felt like physicians as a whole were underpaid. And so on an individual level, we have this ability to negotiate and ask for things, and we have our own perspective on what our individual situation is. But as a whole, we feel like doctors are not being paid what they're worth, which I think goes to that angst against the system and just the overall gestalt of being a physician and being stuck on peer-to-peer calls or having to do financial clearances. It is heartbreaking to me when I have patients show up for surgery who don't have financial clearance, who probably took the week off from work, family traveled to help take care of them, and then they find out on the day of surgery they can't have their surgery because insurance won't cover it, because they deemed it unnecessary, or they need to have a peer-to-peer, or there wasn't a clearance that was prior authorization that needed to happen that fell through the cracks or whatever. And that stuff just kills somebody. It just kills your soul. It is hard to watch that and think that no matter what the number is, you feel fairly compensated. And it's the definition of moral injury. And so I found that interesting.
Yeah. This question goes to the value. Do I feel like I'm appreciated? That's what I feel like.
Yeah.
Do I feel that the compensation, what do I think the compensation that I receive reflects about how society thinks about me? And the number is just a number. You could say, oh, $274,000. That sounds like a lot of money, but what do you do for that? And what are you enduring? How many peer-to-peers, how many times are you arguing with someone who is less credentialed than you?
Yeah,
who has
not
no
peer,
relationship
by the way.
With the patient, who is just stonewalling and is incentivized to stonewall. And actually there's been a lot of, I don't need to go down that rabbit hole, but if you're doing that every day for the $278,000 and you got patients pissed off at your office because you're caught in the crossfire. And I often, Jimmy, I don't know if you, this is a total aside, but seeing the, what's the word? It's not a false dichotomy, but the patient and the doctor are often held up as these are the combatants.
Yeah, 100%.
Whenever it's publicly reported on. And that is, in my view, almost never the case. And physicians and the staff and physician offices, and even frankly, in the bigger healthcare institutions, is always the insurance companies and everyone else fighting about whether or not procedures are going to be covered and then who's going to be left with the downstream effects of it. And I think even the framing of it in the public forum is part of what's driving this angst from doctors is like, this isn't our fault. And yet we're not getting paid enough to deal with all this.
Yeah. So given the social media accounts that I have, which is interesting, by the way, if you were interested in social media stuff, that Instagram, very friendly place to be. Favorite place to be. TikTok, start to get some people that come out of the woodwork that maybe shouldn't be getting served your content. Facebook, people are just kind of mean, much worse. And so because of the content that's put out there, inevitably I get people that are not physicians, not medical professionals that find their way into some of my content. And the comments that are made about how evil physicians are and how we're just out there to make money and that, like, it's just, we're vilified by a lot of people. And yet the things that they complain about in the comment are things caused by insurance companies or administrators or bureaucrats or people that are clearly not in the physician-patient relationship. But they don't realize that because they don't really understand medicine. And so the person that is often blamed is the physician, which you can imagine as the doctor who's trying to actually do the right thing for their people and is making these behind-the-scenes prior authorization calls and peer-to-peer calls that they don't want to do, and the charting that they do for an hour or two when they get home in their pajamas is like, that starts to become personal. You're like, wow, is there an amount of money that you'd be paid where you felt like you're fairly compensated to deal with being the villain, even though you're not actually the villain and you're really trying to help people, but that's not how society sees it. And that's an interesting philosophical question to consider. But four things that we talked about on the show, just to recap, that I thought were interesting. 28% of doctors feel like they make less than their family needs. Paradox that we just talked about of feeling fairly paid personally, but feel like the profession is underpaid. Doctors not really being negotiators and starting to work in this productivity treadmill where compensation conversations are actually discouraged by employers. And then 40% of doctors having a side gig, which I think is just such a telling statistic. When you're making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year and you feel like you still need to make income outside of medicine, I would just leave you with the question of, why do you think almost half of doctors who make very good money in medicine are trying to make money outside of it? I think that's an interesting question to think about as we close the show and for you to consider as you finish your folding of laundry or driving to work or working out or whatever you're doing as you listen to this podcast. As you head out, don't forget, head over to moneymeetsmedicine.com/disability to get a quote for disability insurance. And we would be absolutely honored and privileged to take care of you at Money Meets Medicine Disability. Otherwise, thank you for being a part of the community, sharing the show with your friends and family and others you feel like would benefit. Appreciate you being here. We will see you next week. Cheers.
Justin Harvey is a certified financial planner at APM Wealth, where he helps anesthesiologists and pain medicine physicians. Dr. Jimmy Turner is a practicing academic anesthesiologist at Wake Forest in North Carolina. He's also a licensed insurance agent. However, either Justin or Jimmy are your financial planner, investment advisor, or insurance agent. This show is expressly for general education and entertainment purposes only. Nothing should be considered financial advice. All views expressed are solely the views of the guests on the show and do not represent the views or opinions of their employer. Justin Harvey is a certified financial planner at APM Wealth, where he provides financial advisory services for physicians and their families. Dr. Jimmy Turner is a practicing anesthesiologist in North Carolina and a licensed insurance agent. However, neither Justin nor Jimmy is your financial planner, investment advisor, or insurance agent, and nothing discussed on this show creates that kind of relationship. This show is expressly for general education and entertainment purposes only, and nothing should be considered financial, investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. The views expressed by the hosts and any guests are solely their own and do not represent the views or opinions of their employers, and their appearance on the show does not constitute an endorsement of their services. Before making any financial decisions, of course, consult your own financial, tax, or legal professional who understands your individual situation.